This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
With those wicked winds and all that water. Hey, hey, everybody. Hope you had a fabulous 4th of July celebration. There were some freak accidents that happened at a handful of big fireworks displays. Even an NHL goalie was killed. They're still investigating that as he was fleeing from some fireworks. It's a very strange but sad, sad story. Speaking of fleeing, at this point it's not about that. It's not a hurricane. But Elsa moved over western Cuba, so it's weakened a little bit. Winds are about 50 miles an hour, according to the National Hurricane Center. I just checked in. Elsa hit the south coast of Cuba at that 60 mile an hour winds, which makes a difference even just of 10. So the storm is bringing heavy, heavy rain. They're looking at flash flooding and mudslides. What does that have to do with the U.S.? Because Elsa emerges from the northern coast of Cuba into the Gulf of Mexico, and while it's not ideal for significant strengthening, winds are definitely expected to increase to about 60, 65 miles an hour. The storm moving northward off the west coast of Florida, Cat 1 hurricane strength starts at 74 miles an hour. So heavy rain, gusty winds, increased surf to much of Florida, even as it remains offshore on Tuesday. Cedar Key is where it will hit, most likely on Wednesday morning. Elsa, the first hurricane of the 2021 Atlantic season, the third named storm to pose a threat to the U.S. coast. And, you know, these things are tricky, right? Very. But because of it, the condo collapse, the implosion of what was left, had to be moved up. So in Surfside, Florida, they kept a close eye on the storm, with the search and rescue teams really just scouring that debris like nobody's business from the collapse of the Champlain Tower South condo, still looking for survivors, remains, anything they can find. The part of the building that was up and not falling down was demolished late on Sunday night. And, of course, the fear was that the storm could cause the remaining pieces of it to crumble and put rescue teams at risk. So this is a smart thing. Because with these tropical storms, you just don't know. And especially the wind and what you're talking about, the wind gusts. And tropical warnings are in effect up the west coast of Florida from Flamingo in the Everglades to Englewood, which is just north of Fort Myers. So it's a wide swath. You know, when you start to see the trees bending back, that's when you start to worry. People are seeing the trees bending back. So this is nothing to trifle with. Nothing. And it was sad to see the towers. I mean, it was sad to see the part of the tower come down. But because of this, you have so many others talking about their buildings and are they safe, raising concerns all over the place. San Francisco has a tower they're worried about. It sunk 18 inches into the downtown soil, and it's tilting. Can you imagine? Oh, don't worry. So, you know, we'll give you a little off your rent. It's tilting a little bit. It's sinking, but everybody's fine. And the first clue is if everybody tells you everybody's fine, we're investigating, look out for yourself. Because there's going to be questions about not just this Millennium Tower in San Francisco, but other buildings in other places. Because remember, this was part of the Miami problem of the sinking of the building. certainly the people that were sound asleep weren't thinking anything tragic was going to happen when thinking the building was coming down. So just awful. The best part is that some people got out, told their stories, and are nowhere near that condo collapse, nowhere near it. Thank goodness, right? Coming up this hour of the show, what's on tap? We'll talk about that this week. What's happening on the Hill, if anything? Also, where are we headed in this next election? I mean, if I could tell you exactly, I would be a very wealthy woman, wouldn't I? But just in looking at reading the tea leaves, I think, and looking at what it's going to look like next time around when you go to vote in the midterms, but really in the presidential race as well. So that's to come, part of what's on tap, plus a conversation with Richard Lee and Elizabeth Simon. These are two great guests. You don't want to miss them. They're coming up at the tail end of the show. All right, I hate to give these kind of statistics, but until somehow this is cleaned up, especially in our worst areas, sometimes you got to talk about it. 150 people were killed by some sort of gun violence that broke out in 400 shootings across the U.S. 4th of July weekend. In New York, they're seeing the rise in more deaths. So in New York, there were more deaths. In fact, it spiked almost 40% over the same time period in 2020. We're not anywhere near through to the end of the year. And in Chicago, boy, you just constantly hear Chicago, Chicago, Chicago. In Chicago, the police superintendent, Dave Brown, is concerned because it not only was the most challenging weekend of the year, but 83 people were shot, 14 killed in shootings from 6 p.m. Friday to 6 a.m. on Monday. It included a 5-year-old girl wounded on Sunday and a 6-year-old girl shot on Monday. Wow. How does that happen? We have kids that young that get shot. Whatever the reason, you know, errant bulls, it doesn't matter. They should not be in that position as kids. All right, speaking of not being in position, when we look at COVID-19, boy, there is one place where there is no doubt it is a super spreader event. 125 campers and adults who went to a summer camp run by a South Texas church have tested positive for coronavirus. This is the Clear Creek Community Church. Wow. And the outbreak came from a late June student camp for 6th through 12th grade. That's how old the kids were. That was attended by like 400 people. So think of those numbers and think of all those people that were tested positive for COVID-19. So what do? The Galveston Health Department notifies the positive case tied to it, and they start to trace from there. They have to do all the tracing to get everybody back to realize what's happened. Needless to say, they've had to cancel many, many events as a result of that. All right, what's on tap? We're talking about it on the flip side.
The way things are going these days, do you ever ask yourself, when is the other shoe going to drop? The warning signs are everywhere. The next big danger is food shortages. That's why Americans are learning to be self-reliant and getting their emergency long-term food storage from My Patriot Supply. We're America's trusted leader in emergency preparedness. Over the past decade, My Patriot Supply has served millions of families and helped them prepare. Our delicious meal kits average 2,000 calories per day and stay fresh in storage up to 25 years. This is reliable food that will be there when disasters strike. And with the way things are going, you should grab some now. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a starter kit for each member of your family, and we'll ship everything quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait and scramble with the masses when the news breaks. Instead, prepare today for what's coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing, we've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Time for another edition of What's on Tap. Boy, there is so much happening, I'm telling you, in including this, in looking at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court recently did a donor disclosure ruling, right? They ruled on that. And then the thought is that this ruling could ultimately open the door for so many challenges to campaign contributions. And the campaign contributions, in looking at campaign contributions, you know, often we have a tug of war over this, I think, over, well, wait a second, is what, who's backing the money that's coming in? And it was last week, you might have missed it, it was a 6-3 decision. It was kind of split along, it was not kind of, it was split along ideological, easy for me to say, lines that they struck down a California statute requiring charities to reveal their donors to state officials. So the courts, conservative wing, said the rule had an effect on the First Amendment rights. The ruling doesn't apply to publicly disclosed donors or political groups. But in the majority opinion, this is key, pay attention, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote that disclosure laws have to be narrowly tailored to important government interests. So it toughens the standard of review for all laws, including election rules. In fact, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote in her dissent that the ruling marks reporting and disclosure requirements with a bullseye. The court has consistently affirmed that the disclosure of political contributions and spending advances the government's interest in preventing corruption. So how about that? I think it makes it easier for these attorneys to persuade courts that certain disclosure laws are unconstitutional. And then think of large campaign contributions to politicians, PACs. And I don't know, would PACs be in danger of this? Maybe. It's murky. It's gray. But you can bet some of that is going to be challenged. Campaign finance reform groups are expressing some concern, right? They say it threatens the future of disclosure regimes. So you have, it's so interesting, right? So that's the law. You take the law and you twist it in a couple of, like a pretzel, in a couple of different directions, and it could be challenged in a couple of different ways because it calls into question the number of campaign finance disclosure laws and limits on the amount of money donors can give to political candidates. Now, with the lower courts finding that the laws are not narrowly tailored to prevent corruption or its appearance or don't provide voters with valuable information, two interests that the court recognized in the past to justify campaign laws. So now, again, lower courts can find that they aren't narrowly tailored to prevent corruption or even the appearance of it. So, wow, this could be big. You know, there's this whole thing about accountability. So yay or nay, think about that. That's big. I mean, you can go back to the Supreme Court frequently really affirmed support for campaign finance disclosure. In its 2010 Citizens United ruling, they struck down a ban on corporate political spending, and the justices voted 8-1 to uphold disclosure laws. There was one dissenter, Clarence Thomas. And so this is this other pathway to what does that look like and what can be challenged. Wow. And again, while you were sleeping, what's on tap is all of those challenges and what does it mean as far as disclosure's concerned and what could it possibly open up with campaign financing? A lot, right? There were a couple of things that happened with fireworks and accidents, and so sad. You know, a mortar shell exploding. One guy dying in a fireworks accident after a mortar shell exploded inside a firework tube, and it sent shrapnel into his body and killing him on sight. And this happened about 95 miles northeast of Indianapolis. First responders are called. He was injured while setting them off. And they say, you know, he was 41 years old, Steve Sims, and he had critical injuries. As a result of it, they tried to save his life, but they couldn't do it. So they're investigating that. Then there is this other strange thing that happened in Michigan to an NHL goalie. He's dead after a 4th of July fireworks thing that happened where you had shells that were going off. You had another mortar blast that were going off. And unfortunately, it was aimed too low. Something was wrong with that. Something was wrong with where the aim was. And even though people were scrambling, they couldn't get out of the way of it, or they got out of the way and he was the one, they got out of the way barely, but he was the one that didn't get out of the way. It's sad. He was just 24 years old, a lot of upside. He was probably on his way to playing in more games, and he was an NHL goalie, but he suffered a head injury, and also the cause of death was chest trauma from the fireworks mortar blast. So they're looking into that and what could have possibly happened there. You've got the Blue Jackets leaving hockey sticks outside of Nationwide Arena in Columbus as a tribute to the young goaltender. Wow. You know, you think of that individually, but you don't always think of it in bigger circumstances where somebody's setting off fireworks. Really, really, really sad to hear those stories. All right, and so investigations are what's on tap there so that they can pinpoint what happened and add to thoughts on more safety things, more precautions to take place in the future in both of those areas. I mentioned Elsa in the previous segment, so that's what's on tap this week in Florida, Wednesday, hitting the Keys and seeing where that all ends up, and will the storm completely move over the entire west coast of Florida, and what is that going to look like? Tampa Bay is probably going to bear the brunt of the storm, is what they're saying, as it moves up that coast. So Fort Myers to Tampa are going to have heavy, heavy downpours and strong winds and storm surge, which means up to 4 feet during high tide. Luckily, it starts to weaken into a depression as it moves further inland and hits North Florida and parts of Georgia. So this is going to be that wait-and-see part of when you have a storm like this, because there's no way to accurately say for sure this is exactly where it's going to hit. You're just holding your breath and watching and to see if there going to be any kind of fallout. And if you're traveling this summer, make sure you have all the numbers of everybody you need to tell and car rental places and everything else, because that you're going to arrive late or not get there at all, or get there a day or two later. Southwest Airlines really struggling. What are they doing? What's on tap for them? They're trying to get their act together with pilots, and part of the reason is because they have to be trained. They have to be trained on getting back into the cockpit. So when you have so many people being screened, like, you know, just under 2.2 million travelers were screened at airports on Friday, the highest number since March of 2020. And what we're seeing is long, 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 long lines at airports and really painful flights. People screaming and yelling in some cases, and boy, oh boy, not what you want to do unless you want to get removed from the airport. But I think what's on tap, hopefully, is smoother flying, perhaps by the end of July, beginning of August. Yikes! Meet you on the flip side.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
As rescue efforts continue at the site of the collapsed condo tower in Surfside, Florida, officials are also turning their attention to the survivors and the families of those who have lost loved ones. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis talked Monday about the need for long-term mental health assistance for those people.
This is something that's very traumatic, so the mental health aspects are going to be very, very important, and this is something that is going to be require long-term support. But I can tell you the support is there. getting through some of the bureaucracy to channel that sometimes in situations like this, unfortunately, can be something that we have to do. But the support is there. This community, South Florida, all of Florida, and really people throughout the country have wanted to do it. And we were actually just speaking about ways, the mayor and I were just speaking about other ways that we can channel some of this generosity into relief efforts.
You're listening to USA Radio News. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas will travel to Guatemala Tuesday to meet with members of the Guatemalan government, a month after Vice President Kamala Harris made the same trip as part of her duties to try to stem the flow of migrants to the U.S. border. Former Acting ICE Director Ron Vitello says that working with the Northern Triangle countries is good, but won't stop the surge. He tells Fox News that the root cause of the surge is the reversal of Trump-era policies.
I suppose there's potential there, but the root cause of this surge that's on the border and this uncontrolled pipeline is the reversal of the policies that were allowing people to wait in Mexico for their asylum claims, the accords with the Northern Triangle about asylum reforms. The root cause of this problem, the root cause of the chaos, is because they reversed those policies. Now, working with Guatemala, working with the Northern Triangle on governance and anti-corruption activities, that's all good and well and good, but that's not going to stop the surge that's occurring on the border right now. We've encouraged people to send or bring their children to the border, and the root cause of the chaos is the reversal of these policies.
This is USA Radio News.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Dragon's Breath Book 1. Richard Lee, the author of the book, is with us now. And Richard, I love the cover of this book. I have to say this for everybody listening. I know this is radio, but I do have a thing about dragons anyway. And I just wondered about the cover. You know, it's always difficult when you do a book to come up with, I like that scheme. I like the way this looks. Tell me a little bit about the cover.
Well, the each one of the covers on all three books actually tell a little bit about the story that's happening inside. So in the first book, which is a green cover, the dragon in my book is more like a deity or a god than most typical dragons that you read in, you know, fantasy stories. So I like to give the concept of something very mysterious and kind of reasonable, so that you get more of a sense of this godlike structure and this being, you know. So he's very powerful, and he's, you know, it's not just all fire-breathing kind of thing. He has dominion over, you know, entities and the undead and things like that.
Yeah. So first of all, before we dive into this particular book, how did you come up with this idea? How did this come about for you, this tale, in writing the story?
I've always been a long time fantasy reader anyway, and I've enjoyed that genre. But I had my own take on what I thought was, you know, something a little bit different than most of the writers out there. And again, coming up with a dragon that's far more dangerous than most dragons, you know, not easily slain. As a matter of fact, almost impossible to slay. So it was that storyline and wanting to do something where it's bringing a lot of people together, obviously, that had major differences and the struggles and conflicts of bringing them together, which had to happen for them to have any chance of success whatsoever. So this story kind of bounced around in my head for years. And I finally began writing it in 2008, and it took me about a year to complete the first book.
But you did it, and then, like you say, you took this, you know, you've got, what, you have elves, you have tribes, you have humans. I mean, wow, mixing this all together, was it fun to write once you did it?
Well, it was not only fun to write, but the characters literally wrote the story for me. It's funny, I knew where I wanted to take the story, but I didn't know exactly how I was going to get there. And so when I developed each of the characters, and I have many main characters, they kind of took off on their own and just kind of directed me in several different directions at once. So it was fun trying to see how I was going to bring it all together when, you know, you've got so many different pieces that are taking on their own stories and their own mini-adventures, how that was going to all correlate and wrap itself around to bring them all together again.
Yeah.
So there was some fun in doing it that way.
Yeah, who's your favorite character, Queen of Elves?
She's one. The thing is, I really like strong female characters, and so I've got many in the book. But I've got others that I just kind of see myself as. As a matter of fact, I won't say this, but there's one character I did on myself in the book and kind of patterned my own self after this particular character. So I kind of, you know, I favor him. I'm biased, obviously. But yeah, he would be one. And then, but a lot of female characters that I really enjoyed creating and sprinkling out throughout the entire story. It was a lot of fun to do that.
Yeah. I love that you say the characters wrote themselves, because that's such a sign of a good writer, that they take over your mind. They take over the direction that they want to go, and it just kind of pours out of you. And it poured out of you so much, as you say, this is Dragon's Breath. Book one. So let's set this up. Tell us just a little bit about the story, about after the Great Wars is when this all started.
Yeah, so Mirag, who's the dragon, basically there's a thing called the prophecy, and that's actually the title of the third book. But the prophecy kind of more or less dictates what is going to happen between the dragon, creatures that I call the soulless, and then the elves and the tribes and the dwarves and the humans. And so the elves have disappeared for a time in another dimension completely, and, you know, to protect themselves from being annihilated. And eventually the prophecy more or less dictates that, you know, things have to come to pass where everything goes back to the way it once was, where the world is rejoined again. And so when that begins to happen, then the prophecy begins to fulfill itself. Well, at that point, the dragon knows that he's got an opportunity to now have dominion over everything once the elves return. And so that's when the prophecy kicks in, and it kind of dictates where everybody's going to be and what they need to do in order to either fulfill the prophecy or have the dragon, in this case, make the prophecy fulfill his way. So there's a lot of, you know, drama involved in doing that. And so I bring the tribes into it eventually, which are, you know, my theory was is that the tribes are actually descendants of the elves. So it's kind of neat to bring in that native lore into perspective as well. And then bringing all these people together, and again, they had clashes and they had their own differences, and trying to bring them all together to finally have enough to go against this dragon and the soulless, which are, you know, there are millions of them that come from an area called the Void. So it's a kind of a place that's really desolate and in between worlds entirely. And as the dragon, you know, begins to bring these armies out, and you know, mankind and humankind and dwarvenkind all have to face it, it becomes a real elaborate struggle. And I was compared a little bit to George R. R. Martin in respect to the fact that I kill off a lot of my main characters during the story.
Oh, yeah, taking us down that road where we fall in love with them and then you take them away from us. Wow.
Yes, and there is a funny story I have to tell you. So there was a gal that had been reading the book, and she'd gotten in the second book, and after a certain part she'd read, she actually threw the book across the room and landed in the corner, and she left it there for a day or so because she was so mad at me for killing off one of the characters.
Exactly. That's what happens. You really like a character, and then they're gone. So you knew that you had more than one book, right? And you knew, okay, I'm just going to continue this. And what was it like to continue, you know, to write another one and another one?
Well, it was like, you know, and that was the struggle in itself. It was literally 10 years before I actually got the second book written. And it wasn't because I didn't have the book, you know, in mind. I did. But I went through some personal situations, and it just, you know, I kind of got out of the writing mood until I got my, you know, life kind of squared away. And when I did, I had met a new gal, and we got married. And she began helping me with writing the second book. So that became such a wonderful adventure to do with Mika. And we would sit and we would talk about where the story was going to go and what should happen. And then I'd sit down the next day and begin writing the next chapter. And we'd kind of do that process on and off for quite a while. And it took about 6 months to do that. And then sadly, she ended up with breast cancer. And so we went through a period there that was really difficult, and eventually I lost her because of that. So once again, I kind of quit writing. But I'd made a promise to her shortly before she passed away that I would finish the third book. I would finish the trilogy. And so afterwards, I, you know, and sitting down and thinking to myself, I owed her that much to do it, and I wanted to finish the book anyway. It was just something that was a lifelong dream to do. So believe it or not, I sat and wrote the third book in less than a month.
Wow. Wow, that was her influence. I love it. So
it was.
Wow, so you do the three, and then ultimately, as people are listening to this conversation, what do you hope people take away from reading your first one and all of them, Dragon's Breath, book one?
Well, for me, it was a combination of both a love story, several love stories, in fact, you know, the trials and tribulations that everyone goes through in life.
Yeah.
And so did all the characters in my books. But I wanted to show what the sacrifices are made, you know, in those relationships. And sometimes there are loves that are lost and the sacrifice of having to go through that for the greater good and for the sake of mankind. And I really wanted to stress that. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and having seen the hardships that a lot of my buddies went through during Vietnam, and it just made me, again, kind of correlate my own experiences to those of the characters in the book and the things that you see in the devastation of war and how horrendous it can really be. And I wanted to portray that in the book with the sacrifices that were made throughout the entire story and the loves that were going on throughout the entire story. So yeah. It was a combination of mixing those two together.
Well, and you did it quite well, I have to say, for sure. Get these books, all of them, but Amazon is, get that first one, Dragon's Breath, book one. You'll get hooked on it, and then you'll get angry at Rick Lee, but you will survive. So, Rick, that's a big compliment when someone says that to you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop.
and cancer dies in oxygen. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown, small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Virtual green room right now, Elizabeth Simon. She's written a couple of books, Blood Moon Over the Pines and The Mentor. We talked off the air, and wow, especially when how she came up with Blood Moon Over the Pines. So, Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Tell us about Blood Moon Over the Pines. How did you come about writing that book? How did that book come to you?
That book came to me by a dream I had that was a recurring dream over a period of years until one day I decided to just jot down what I dreamed, and then I decided to write about it.
And tell us the story of that. Like, we won't give everything away, but tell the listeners the story and what it's about.
The story is about a young girl that grows up with a crush on a man in high school years, and they eventually get married, but the man commits a murder, and she covers it up and takes the blame for it until she shoots him and then has to go through the justice system.
Ooh, and then going through the justice system, it is, it's tough. I think it's not what people think it is because they see things on television, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And for you, this is, I mean, both of these books are very, very personal because of your story.
Yes.
Yeah. And, so tell, because I think this is so significant and it's the impact of the books. Tell us about your story.
My story, is The Mentor. It's about my growing up in the black community and being driven to a crime spree after a divorce. My ex-husband stalked me and did a number of things. There were over 30 police reports, and he just drove me to commit a crime spree.
And when you say crime spree, tell us, like, what do you mean by that?
I shot and killed my brother, and I shot three other people at a service center during daytime hours, and I'm not proud of it. I cry about it, and I can't believe myself that I did this, this shooting. And my brother wanted to kill my mother. He was a paranoid schizophrenic, and we went through all kinds of trials and tribulations with him, and I just snapped.
You just snapped because you had enough, and then that happened, and then you then ultimately you did time, and in doing time, then you also had to come out on the other side, and how tough was all that? How long were you incarcerated?
I was incarcerated 4 years. Louisiana incarcerates people before they go to court. And they may wait 90 days to 6 months before they ever get their day in court. And some may be found innocent, and some are given, they're given credit for time served. I was there 2 years before I went to trial. And then after being found not guilty by reason of insanity, I was kept in jail another 2 years. So altogether, I did 4 years in jail. And during that time, you know, I made use of the programs they had and reading my Bible and coming to know God and establishing a good relationship with God.
And in that, and you talk about in the mentor, you talk about, which is different from Blood Moon Over Pines, which we talked about, the dream and how it came to you in the story. But with the mentor and how personal that is, when people read the story, what do you want them to know? What do you hope they take away from reading this story?
That you should never give up, you know, face reality and face the public. You have to not wear your heart on a sleeve. And after incarceration in jail, pick yourself up and get a job. Follow your probation rules, because I was on probation 12 years. And I was a model probationer. I was not a model prisoner. But I like for them to just pick themselves up and know that we are all sinners who fall short of the glory of God, that they can start again and renew their life.
Yeah. And so people know this. You know, your book talks about what we just talked about, your childhood, your family life, and it tells your story of what happened to you and what happened on that day and all of that. And then, as you describe, doing time. But it also, in the mentor, you come back, you vowed to come back, you go back to jail as a mentor to help inmates and tell them how to survive and what brought them to jail. What does that do for you?
It was very uplifting. It was a privilege afforded by our sheriff, Tony Mancuso, to allow lay people to come into the jail and minister. They could have told me no, but they let me come on in, and I taught them about 1 Samuel, Hannah asking God to give her a son. It was a vow that she made, and then I tell them that while incarcerated, I made this vow because I was waiting so long to be released from jail, and I vowed that I would come back, because during the time that I was in jail, I performed paralegal services. I was the librarian. I was a trustee, various duties, and I would sit with them and help them fill out the forms. to go to court and get released. And it was just, you know, I found outlets in jail to prepare myself to come out into society.
Yeah, so, and in coming out into society, how are you now, and what do you do now?
I am just an ordinary person. I work in a grocery store. I have gone back to college. I've gotten 2 degrees. I've been unemployed for 16 years. I'm about to retire, you know, and you don't get retirement if you're selling drugs. You have to work for it. And I feel like I'm feeling the fruits of all my labor, praying, reading the Bible, working, following the rules, taking medication, getting treatment. You know, I have now begin to reap the benefits of all that hard work.
Yeah. So you can come out on the other side, and that's the message of the mentor, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Wow. And now after writing these two books, will you write another?
Yes. I went to my congressman, Clay Higgins, and I went to my state representative, who was A.B. Franklin, and I asked them to devise a bill to require young elementary and junior high students and high school to go through a 6-week course about breaking the law. And to be taught about the law and how they get trapped, because during that court time when I would go in, I would see these young men, 20 years old, getting 30 year sentences, spending their life in jail. And so I'm going to say it's a children's book, but I don't know exactly how I'm going to write it, but I am going to tell them about the consequences of breaking the law. And right now, it's the title is Little Boy, Little Girl, Don't Go to Jail, but it may change by the time I finish the book.
Yeah. Yep. Gotcha. Well, these two, Blood Moon Over Pines, Over the Pines, and of course, The Mentor, you can get them on Amazon. Elizabeth Simon, thanks for sharing your story and joining us on the show.
Thank you.
All right, so what a story Elizabeth Simon has to tell. I mean, you heard her say that the crime spree that she went on, imagine, you know, shooting and killing your brother and then coming out on the other side of that. And the mentor, especially the mentor, focuses obviously all on that, what drove her to commit the crime, as she told us, and her stay at the of being incarcerated, what that was like, and then coming back and mentoring inmates on surviving, and then also what it was, as I mentioned to her, that brought them to jail in the first place, the teaching of life skills and reentry skills and all of that. So interesting tale. Elizabeth Simon, as I mentioned there, again, the two books, Blood Moon Over Pines and The Mentor. Thanks for listening to this interview and this show. Make it count, everybody. As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.